The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.
Knowing the headlines isn't always enough. Sometimes you need to talk about it. For stimulating conversation on the day's hot topics, this is your station. This is your show. The Ryan Jesperson Show on 630 CHED, Edmonton's breaking news and conversation station.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Ryan Jesperson Show for this Wednesday, August 3rd. Shig Adam filling in for Ryan today, and we've got a jam-packed show coming up for you today. Lots to talk about, of course, plenty of things going on. The inquiry into the missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada was announced this morning. Who will be taking part in that inquiry, exactly what they'll be doing, how much money it'll cost. We'll go a little deeper into that announcement a little later this morning. Also, we're going to talk about keeping your kids safe when they're online. This is a big, big issue. Pokemon Go, which, as you know, is a huge craze right now. And that only adds to the dangers that kids are getting into, because now they're not only on the internet, but they're also going on the internet and walking around the neighborhood. So we're going to have a member of the EPS in here talking about their Safe in Six program and just what it does to help keep kids safe when they're online. We're also going to talk about the food bank. They had a tough go of it down at the Heritage Festival over the weekend. Did not come close to meeting their goal, and that is one of their major fundraisers and food raisers for the year. So we'll talk to them about what that means going forward. A couple other things going on, but we're going to start by taking a closer look at one of the issues in the election campaign in the United States. I mean, we could spend days talking about that campaign in the United States. It is like no other campaign we have ever seen anywhere, I would say. And one of the issues that keeps coming up over and over again is trade. NAFTA has been talked about a lot. Exactly how that'll affect Canada is an issue that we should take a closer look at, because we hear Donald Trump talk a lot about pulling out of NAFTA or renegotiating NAFTA, and that's certainly been one of his key campaign things. But it's important to note that going back to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in 2008, they both said the same thing. So it's been a constant topic of discussion as far as the United States election campaigns go. So joining us this morning, we have Mark Warner, who is an international trade lawyer. And Mark, let's just talk a bit about the situation there and exactly what it means. Mark, are you with us?
You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay, sorry. I think we got you now. So, yeah, when I was mentioning NAFTA and some of the talk that we've heard about it, and certainly whatever happens in the United States has a big impact on Canada, but when we talk about NAFTA specifically, how seriously do you think we should listen to the rhetoric? How much follow-through will there be on this campaign rhetoric?
Well, I think on NAFTA, NAFTA's never been popular during election times. It's something that always comes up, and then when presidents get in power and they start looking at the long laundry list of issues facing them, I think it sort of goes to the bottom of the pile. This election is, I guess, slightly different in the sense that usually we expect that the opposition to NAFTA and to trade in general would come from the Democrats and from sort of their union supporters. And what's so different, I guess, this time around is that Donald Trump's populist style of campaigning has moved the Republican Party's almost 30 or 40-year commitment to free trade into the column of being the anti-free trade people. So I think we need to be aware of it. We need to be cautious about it. But I don't think we should react stridently or we should overreact to it. We should, I think, take it in stride. Because it's not exactly clear what they really mean. Clearly, the main focus for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I think, is Mexico. And so the question then is, what would that mean if they were to get rid of NAFTA? Would it mean that someone like, and Donald Trump's case, he sort of said that his preference is for bilateral trade agreements as opposed to multilateral agreements. And of course, we had the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement before we had NAFTA. So one school of thought is, well, okay, if NAFTA's gone, then maybe Canada just goes back to having a bilateral Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. Lots of technical legal questions in there and how that would come to pass and how automatic that would be. But perhaps that would be something that wouldn't necessarily displease a lot of Canadians.
And Mark, let's just back up a little bit and talk about NAFTA and the effect it's had on Canadians in general. A recent poll says that only 1 in 4 Canadians actually feel that NAFTA has been positive. But when you do a poll of business executives, the number reaches close to 90%. So there's a clear disconnect between people running the businesses and your average Canadian citizen in terms of the benefit that we've seen in Canada because of NAFTA going back more than 20 years. In your opinion, has NAFTA been good for Canada or has it been bad for Canada?
I think it's been unquestionably good for Canada, although the careful economic surveys have shown that we've increased our trade, increased our sort of growth rates that come around. It doesn't mean it's uniform. Clearly, there are sectors, like in the auto sector, there have been some changes as auto production has moved south. Now, a lot of that gets blamed on NAFTA, but it really, in my judgment, probably isn't NAFTA per se. Mm-hmm. In some sense, NAFTA probably helped us because we've been able to land more of the Japanese auto producers on our side of the border. And in the absence of NAFTA, they probably would have gone straight into the American market. So you could pick out pockets of industrial sectors that have been hurt, but I think on balance, we've really prices have come down to some extent for consumers in some markets, and we've produced different things than we might have before NAFTA. So I think it's been a positive. In terms of the poll that was done by Angus Reid, my take on that is, that for the last 6 months or so, Canadians have been watching the news, where basically NAFTA has been taking a hit from all the American politicians. So I think some of that crosses the border in a kind of Me Too-ism. I'm not sure how much stock to really put in that particular survey at this time.
Now, a lot of the focus in the United States as they go through this campaign has been on jobs, especially in the case of Donald Trump and talking about bringing jobs back to the Rust Belt of the United States. And he points the finger squarely at NAFTA. Has NAFTA resulted in job loss? I mean, when we look at job loss in basically any industry in North America, you've got automation, you've got technology. There's lots of things that go into, the changing workforce in this country. So how much of the blame really should go to NAFTA?
Well, I think that the careful economic studies on this really suggest that if we're speaking of the United States, that the job losses have really come not so much from NAFTA or from trade with Mexico, but really with the Chinese economy coming on to stream. And, particularly in terms of China joining the WTO, the World Trade Organization. And I think that sort of has been more of a hit to the system than has been Mexican trade or trade with NAFTA. And, both sides of the border, we really never came up with a lot of adjustment programs for the industrial sectors that were hit by, the effects of either the Chinese coming onto the market or NAFTA itself. So some people in some industries have been hit hard, obviously. I think the careful economic studies really is one that I look to is from this think tank in Washington called the Peterson Institute that looked at it very carefully at it. And it would suggest that, to the extent the trade's been a problem, it really hasn't been NAFTA.
And I've also seen some numbers in terms of manufacturing in the United States. That's another thing Donald Trump likes to say, that we don't build anything in America anymore. But if you go back to when NAFTA started and the manufacturing in the U.S. at that point versus what it is today, the difference is, well, frankly, it's staggering.
So the manufacturing has been increased in the last couple of years in the United States under President Obama. Now, some of that has a response to currency fluctuations in terms of the dollar. Another part of it is just the sheer wage rates in China have gone up. China is now expensive. The problem that people have, Walmart came out with a billion-dollar policy about a year ago where they said they were going to try to source more products like in the United States as opposed to China or wherever. And they've had a hard time with that because they've been able to source more products in the United States, but they haven't been able to bring back jobs because of automation. So even as manufacturing goes up, it's probably it's not going to look like the manufacturing that we left that existed 20 years ago.
Okay, so when we talk about the Republican, we know what Donald Trump is saying in terms of NAFTA, but I think it's important to point out that, as you said, the Democrats also have taken at least a rhetorically strong stand against NAFTA, both Clinton and Obama campaigning in previous election campaigns to say they would renegotiate NAFTA. As you said, once they got into office, that never happened. In terms of their position heading into this campaign, with the pressure coming from the Republicans, is there a chance that if they do get in, there'll be more pressure on them to actually renegotiate NAFTA this time around?
Well, we'll have to wait and see exactly what the Congress ends up looking like, and all of that's in a mess, because so much of trade policy in the United States really is driven by what the two houses of Congress want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if a lot of populist Republicans get elected on the coattails of a Donald Trump, then those, you add those together with the populist Democrats who have already been there, then that could lead to a lot more pressures to, bring trade cases or against other countries. I think, here's the way I look at it. I see that no matter who's elected, whether it's Trump or Clinton, I think we're in for a period where we're going to see a lot more sort of trade remedy cases, anti-dumping cases, countervailing duty cases, sort of protectionist sort of stuff coming out of the United States. I don't think that we're going to see so much the actual renegotiation of NAFTA. I think there was a comment from the Mexican, I think, finance minister last week saying, look, you know, we're willing to sort of look at renegotiating elements of NAFTA. So really the focus for the Americans is much more on Mexico than on NAFTA. And if there's something that has to be done about labor rules in NAFTA, you know, and the Mexicans are willing to open that, I can't see why we as Canadians would say, no, we want to keep that closed.
And as far as renegotiating NAFTA, of course, that's a discussion that both sides have put on the table. But that's not as easy as it is, as it sounds, I don't think. I mean, in terms of renegotiating NAFTA, you've got some high-level meetings and a lot of legal wrangling to get through before it happens. Is that something that, is realistic in terms of let's sit down and renegotiate NAFTA, or is that just opening up a quagmire?
Thinking about this as a lawyer, an American lawyer and a Canadian lawyer, so first of all, what the president can do, it's pretty clear that under the terms of NAFTA, Article 2205, the president can give notice to both Mexico and Canada that he's withdrawing the United States from
in 6 months, right?
That's simple, that's easy, he can do that. Then the complex question comes up in terms of, well, can he actually change the underlying law? Because a law that was passed, it's called the NAFTA Implementation Act, was passed, would require Congress to repeal that. So that probably leads to an awful lot of litigation in the U.S. Now, having said that, where it becomes political is if, you know, the president sits down and says to the Canadians and to the Mexicans, look, I want to renegotiate this, and I'm going to give you guys 6 months, you know, what do we do? do we say, okay, fine, let it end, or do we sit down and say, okay, we'll talk? And I think that's where you get someone like a real estate magnate like Donald Trump, who wrote the book, The Art of the Deal. Part of what he's counting on is not really on that people will actually end NAFTA. What he's really, I think, counting on is that you get people around the table, and under the pressure cooker environment, that people make concessions. And I guess the particular people he wants concessions from at this point are the Mexicans. Not clear exactly what those are. He's not specific, nor is Hillary Clinton, by the way, specific about what changes she wants in NAFTA. And from the Canadians, well, he's kind of told us what he wants from us on Keystone XL. He'd like, to get more a share of the profits if he approves it. So somehow I think Donald Trump would wrap all that stuff up into a negotiation. But the mechanics of a negotiation are, you know, if a president wants to notify us, that's fairly simple to do. And then the question becomes, politically, what would a Justin Trudeau government or the Mexican counterpart decide to do?
Okay, Mark, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll come back and continue that discussion in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Ryan Jesperson Show on 630 CHED.
You're listening to The Ryan Jesperson Show on 630 CHED, Edmonton's breaking news and conversation station.
And welcome back to The Ryan Jesperson Show. Shay Ganim sitting in for Ryan today for the rest of this week. In fact, we're talking about NAFTA and what may happen to NAFTA following the U.S. election. As you know, Donald Trump has made a lot of hay talking about getting out of NAFTA or at least renegotiating it. But the Democrats have done the same thing over the years. So NAFTA is certainly on the table and perhaps in the sights of these presidential candidates. Joining us on the phone, we have Mark Warner, an international lawyer. We're talking a bit about the process of getting out of NAFTA, and I assume it applies to all countries involved, Mark, if they did decide that for whatever reason they wanted to renegotiate or to leave NAFTA. It's that same thing, giving notice to the other parties involved, and then 6 months later we start the process. It's the same for everyone involved?
It is the same. So basically, if the United States wants out, they tell Canada and Mexico they want out, and they have 6 months to basically negotiate it or get out. The one twist to that is NAFTA could remain in effect between Canada and Mexico. So we could choose to maintain, you know, the rump of NAFTA without the United States. Whether we would actually find that in our interest to do that, I think, is something that people will have to explore at some point.
Well, I think when you take a look at Canadian trade, the fact of the matter is the United States is absolutely essential to Canada. The vast majority of anything we export ends up in the United States. So I think it's in our interest to tread very lightly when it comes to trade with our neighbors to the south, isn't it?
I think that that's right. I mean, I think that's right. And plus, in our case, you know, a lot of people think we could flip back to the old Canada-U.S. free trade agreement. And
right.
In some respects, some of the more left-wing groups in Canada who don't like NAFTA, for instance, you always hear the criticism you hear of the Trans-Pacific Partnership and of NAFTA is that they have the investor state provision or chapter where companies can sue governments that have contravened the investment part of the chapter of the treaty. Well, the interesting thing about that is there is no investor state provision within the Canada-U.S. free trade agreement. So, you know, when you start working through the various permutations and combinations, you might end up with some left-wing groups in Canada that might say, might be sympathetic to what Donald Trump wants from Mexico in terms of NAFTA, and might be sympathetic with reverting to the old Canada-U.S. free trade agreement to get away from investor state dispute settlement. So there are all kinds of little twists and ideological caves to
Yeah, it's an incredibly, incredibly complex issue. And to make it even more complex, I think we're focusing mainly on NAFTA, but NAFTA is just one agreement, as you mentioned, the TPP. And then, of course, we've got, you know, China being part of the World Trade Organization. And internationally, it's become a global economy, and NAFTA is just one piece of it, right?
Yeah. So what's interesting there is that in many respects, TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, was, I think, from an American point of view, a way of updating and modernizing NAFTA. So what's so startling in some sense about some of the criticisms of NAFTA, you know, in terms of labor provisions, is that Obama would argue that he has strengthened that by creating stronger labor provisions in the TPP. And so he would say back to someone like Donald Trump, what's your problem? I've done this in the TPP. I agree with you. Your problems in NAFTA, let's all sign up to the TPP and we're going to get rid of some of those problems. If your problem is currency manipulation, well, we have nothing about currency manipulation in NAFTA. Now I've got a side agreement, which may or may not be enforceable, but I've got a side agreement on currency manipulation for the countries in the TPP, which if the China were ever to join at some point down the road, they would have to agree to. So I think that that's the tricky one. Obama gave a speech yesterday where he said that he's still going to try to get the TPP passed in what's called the lame duck session of Parliament. So that's Congress, sorry. So that's the period, the 2 month period after the American elections, where everyone who was basically elected the last time out is still in power until January. And Obama is basically threatening or promising to basically try to force a vote on TPP. And both Hillary Clinton and Trump have said that they don't think anything should happen in the lame duck session.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama's saying, well, I'm still president until January 15th, and I'm going to use all my powers of persuasion and otherwise. So that sets up a quite interesting fall after the election, if the election weren't interesting enough.
Yeah, no kidding. What a system. Okay, just before we go, bottom line here, it is such a complex issue. It is so big. If you're your average Canadian, a worker, I mean, we know there are so many different aspects to it, but for your average Canadian, how much attention, how much concern should we be putting into the rhetoric we're hearing from south of the border in terms of NAFTA, renegotiating it, or the United States simply walking away from it? Is it something we should be losing sleep over?
I wouldn't lose any sleep over it at this point. I think we should be aware of it, we should be conscious about it, but we shouldn't hyperventilate about it. I mean, you know, when you go on social media, on Twitter, everyone is hyperventilating. Hopefully people who are actually working on Twitter so aren't hyperventilating. I mean, we should be aware of it, we should study, and then hopefully the government in the background is looking into, you know, playing out, you know, the various possibilities. I think what's more likely to happen, and this is a more serious concern, is that NAFTA won't be renegotiated, but we will see a rise of protectionism from the United States,
mm-hmm.
regardless of NAFTA. And some, you know, a lot of Canadians, sometimes, you know, government people and sometimes business people, think that the NAFTA got rid of anti-dumping and countervailing duties and trade remedies, and it didn't. It just created a system to discipline that. And I think that the surprise for Canadians is going to come, perhaps, regardless of who's elected, when we see a lot more anti-dumping and countervailing duties cases against Canada.
All right, so something to watch as we go through the next 3 months here. Mark, thanks so much for spending some time with this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Mark Warner, an international lawyer, talking about NAFTA and what could happen to NAFTA following the U.S. presidential election. Vote isn't until November 8th, folks. We've got a few more months of this to get through. We'll take a quick break and come back with more of The Ryan Jesperson Show here on 630 CHED.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.